You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2. Brought to you in part by Alpine Credits. Own your home and need a loan? With Alpine Credits, homeowners get approved. The unofficial fifth line of the Leafs.
I did see something on Twitter where there were, like, you know, championships and playoff.
There's a little kid that holds up a sign every parade, and he's like, I'm 9 years old. This is my eighth parade.
Most annoying kid on earth.
Yeah, I know.
The most annoying
kid
on earth.
I hate that kid.
I hate that kid.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, Marcellus Wiley later in the hour. Patrick Mahomes doing it again last night.
He is electric to watch, man.
You know what's incredible about this kid? Technically, he's not a rookie. Last year, he sat on the bench behind Alex Smith. But in terms of him actually getting starts, he's no different than any of these rookies. Than, you know, Darnold.
He was just picking the D apart.
He like at will. Spectacular. And honestly, I think we've already reached a point with Mahomes, with these stats, where there's like complacency that's set in, where it's a sense of normalcy, where if any of these other kids put up one of the games that he has put up, he's put up, what, seven of them?
Yeah.
If Josh Rosen did this once, if Josh Allen did it once, if Baker Mayfield did it once, we talk about it for days and be like, this kid is going to be great. Man, this is why Mayfield went first overall. Mahomes doing it every single week.
Yeah.
Four touchdowns, 350 yards, runs for a touchdown, like every single week. And he's been starting for 7 weeks.
And
we're already used to it. Like, we expect it. I expect him to do it again the rest of the season.
I was watching last night, like, paying close attention to how impressive he is. He actually makes you want to watch that team.
He's been playing primetime games, I think 3 primetime games in 3 weeks. They flexed that game last night so that NBC could have it on Sunday Night Football. And not because of the Bengals. Nobody cares about the Bengals. And Kansas City, that's not New York or L.A. or Chicago. It's all because of Mahomes. And it's the right move. The ratings would have been through the roof to watch him play.
It was unreal.
Unreal.
When's the last quarterback that created a stir like that where he started moving the needle like a young kid? Is that Michael Vick?
As a rookie, maybe Vick. Yeah.
Where it's like you just got to watch this to see the flat-out playmaking ability.
Yeah.
Just make a play.
He Sandlot-type football. Like, going out there, I don't know what he's going to do next, but I guarantee you it'll make your jaw drop. Like, he's going to do something tonight that you didn't think could happen from a kid making his seventh start.
He's moving the needle where everything's blown out of proportion. Everyone talked about that left-handed throw he made a few weeks back where it was like a 5-yard shot put.
It was a big first down, though, man.
I know, but
it was a big first down. I hear you. It wasn't like the greatest play in the history of the game.
But when you move the needle, that's what kind of happens. I mean,
people are paying attention to him.
Yeah.
Everything he does, it's under the microscope, which again, I think speaks to how impressive he's been. He hasn't cracked. Like, I keep waiting for it. Last week in New England, he had a poor first half, was brilliant in the second half. They lost the game, but man, he made it close.
Yeah.
Jacksonville at home a few weeks ago, I'm like, this is it. Jacksonville's going to get him. Not even close. They blew him out.
Hey, he's been
great.
Like, last night was impressive to watch.
Yeah. No, he's really good.
And under pressure, he just wheels out of the pocket.
Well, and you know what? Like, the Bills, the poor Buffalo Bills, I follow a guy on Twitter who's a radio guy down in Buffalo.
Yeah.
And he's a big Buffalo sports fan.
Yeah.
And just watching him pour his heart out on Twitter, because they had the opportunity to draft all these guys. You know, Wentz and Goff and Mahomes and Watson, and just miss. And all these guys are doing spectacular things with other teams. And maybe Josh Allen turns into something, I don't know. But you've got Derek Anderson playing quarterback. They had 5 points yesterday. Derek Anderson got picked 3 times. And listen to this stat, okay? This is the most fascinating stat I think I've ever seen in my life.
All right.
We're 7 weeks into the season. This isn't like a preseason stat. Hey, this is pretty wild and wacky stuff.
Check out for this coming up.
Todd Gurley, who's a running back for the Rams and probably the best running back in the game, and the Rams outside of Kansas City are right there with Kansas City in terms of the most electric offense in the game. They might have the most electric offense.
Yeah.
Gurley is crushing numbers and putting up stats. Todd Gurley is personally responsible for more points this season than the whole Bills offense. He has personally scored more touchdowns. I think he's got 7 rushing and 3 or 4 receiving, or something along those lines.
And the Rams we've heard that story before. Like early in the season, it was like Austin Matthews has so and so goals.
It's week 7.
No, I don't.
It's week 7. Yeah. He's one player. He's the running back. This means,
dude, they pissed me off. They suck. And the one thing they did on the positive, it punted us from the survivor pool.
The only thing they've done well this year is sewer us in the survivor pool with a shocking win in Minnesota.
What did you make of that call for the Titans going for the win?
The 2 points.
I loved it.
I like it too. You know, you're
it's like
tough.
You're against a better team. Why not just go for the win? Why do you want an overtime?
I like it.
I felt bad for the kicker yesterday who had 300 consecutive.
Justin Tucker.
Yeah.
The kicker for the Ravens. The most accurate kicker in NFL history, I believe.
That ball was going straight in, and then the wind just took it out.
His,
I swear.
His face.
He had a Scrabble face.
He had the old, he had the Randy Carlyle.
It was like the 2 a.m. ugly lights at the bar, and he was like, what?
What the hell is this?
You're not what I thought you were.
What have I been dancing with for the past hour and a half? Like the bulging eyes, and he was in shock. And listen.
There are a lot of people that gave him a pass, and so they should.
Eventually, you're going to miss a PAT, but that is the worst possible time. That is to tie the game with no time left on the clock against a tough opponent at home in New Orleans. Anyway, we'll get to this later in the hour with Marcellus Wiley, joined now by our TSN hockey analyst. Here is Ray Ferraro. What's up, Ray?
Not much. Just hit some balls.
You're still playing?
Driving home. Yeah, it's beautiful right now. We had a crappy September, and we're getting a great October, so making up for it.
Ray, we were chatting about the Leafs Saturday night game. Obviously, it didn't go very well. They played a real desperate St. Louis Blues team that had been struggling, and Yo had moved some pieces around. But the one thing that we kept coming back to, and Brian brought it to front and center, is you're down 3-1 into the third period, and Austin Matthews only plays 17:30 the other night. And, you know, at some point when the team isn't playing, you play Saturday. Should Babs be doubling down on some of these guys to try and get them? I mean, go down swinging at 3-1. Why not double shift Matthews and see what Tavares can do? And they weren't playing great, but ultimately you wouldn't need them to get back in the game.
Well, you need one, you know, as CC always says, you need one to get within one. And,
right.
You know, like, so maybe later in the game when it's still 3-1, you don't play them as much. But when it's early portions of the third and it's 3-1, like, why not have them on the ice? Like, with all consideration to other players, like, you can put some of the guys out there for a month of Sundays and they're not going to score. And even if he's having a crappy game or not as productive game, he and Tavares really didn't, you know, they couldn't find a way to punch through. Although I think Matthews had 11 shot attempts.
Yeah, he did.
But, you know, like, sometimes I don't quite get it. Like, he never changes lines. Like, he never jumbles lines in game. I can't remember the last time he had a significant make significant changes. Why not? Doesn't mean you have to go to it all the time, but throw a jolt in to something. Like, why not put Kadri on the wing with Tavares?
Ray, if there's only one period left, why not put Matthews with Tavares and Marner and then Kadri with and just go too heavy and find a third line that can kill a minute?
Like, I find it right now, it's like, you know, things went so well. Now they've not gone, you know, quite as well the last couple of games, and they looked a little stunned, I thought, the other night against Pittsburgh, that things, they didn't even look frustrated, they looked stunned, that things weren't going quite as, you get into it 2 games in a row, and they could have played in my mind anyway, they could have used the personnel different, They could have changed the lines, but in both games, they got beat to way too many 50-50 pucks. When they didn't have the puck, they didn't work hard enough to get it back or smart enough to get it back. And for the most part, they weren't very dangerous. And that's very unlike the first five or six games.
Yeah, there were similarities in both losses. I think the Leafs were much worse on Saturday. The Thursday night game against Pittsburgh, I just give credit to Pittsburgh. That was a good team, a hungry team. And they stifled the Leafs, and the Leafs just couldn't find a way to get anything going. Not to take anything away from the Blues, who were desperate too and hungry and in town and ready to rock, and they played well. I just thought the Leafs were lifeless for the most part. But you knew this was coming. You know, when you start 6-1 and you win 5 in a row, the old topics that were hovering in the summer, they disappear for a while, but they're going to come alive again when you start losing a couple. And it's not the end of the world, but the Matthews ice time discussion was prevalent for 4 months. We talked about it all the time in the summer, and even post-April when they were out of the playoffs. And we referenced a couple of other examples where McDavid's playing 23, 24 minutes a night. He's playing all the time. You don't have to do that. I'm not suggesting that Matthews has to average 21, 22 minutes. But Jack Eichel yesterday on a back-to-back played almost 22 minutes in Anaheim. I just don't understand it. Like, I wish Babcock would take us through it. He's not going to because he doesn't feel like he has to.
No, he's going to say, Connor McDavid plays 23 minutes a night. He told us this last year, but guess what he didn't do?
Yeah, he didn't make the playoffs. I get it. I understand it. But, like, Saturday night, it's 3-1. There's some life finally in the building, and the fourth line takes a shift. Like, what? Why? You don't play until Wednesday. I can't wrap my head around it, Ray.
Well, I can't. I just can't come up with a scenario where Matthews isn't at 20 minutes. Like, I'm with
you,
Brian.
On any night.
On any night, yeah. He doesn't have to play Connor McDavid's minutes. He's a different player, and he probably can't handle the minutes McDavid can handle because of the way that McDavid can move around the ice and kind of, he can lurk a little bit, McDavid, because he can bolt into the play and then lurk back a little bit. So maybe it's not 24 minutes, but I can't believe it's not 20 minutes. And any shift when you're trailing 3-1 in the third period that involves their fourth line is a wasted 35 seconds. They're not scoring. It's not happening. Like, I don't, how are they going to score? They don't have the puck. They can't generate off the rush. They have to plunge it around and maybe get something off a forecheck. I don't know what's happened to Johnsson, but he's zero factor.
Zero. Like, he doesn't even look like an NHL player. He was so good in the playoffs last year and in the NHL when he came up, but he is a non-factor. Looks like a non-NHL player.
You know what he looks like to me, though, is remember when Nikita Soshnikov came on and he was just like this lightning bolt, and then he got hurt, and then he just faded away. It looks the same to me.
Well, you
right
hope
now, and Babcock's talked about, oh, he's going to, you know, he's a major part of the future. And, well, I got an idea. You've got, all of a sudden, your lines can't score. Put him up in a top nine spot. Play him on the wing with one of your three best centers. Give it a game or two, and just see if that is an initiative for him to get moving. And if it's not, then you might have a Soshnikov. Because right now, he's been zero factor at all.
Well, their depth guys have to bring more. I mean, we knew that when they were scoring 6-7 a night because it was the same three or four guys. I mean, even on Saturday night, it's Morgan Riley that scores again.
Yeah, Jonas Siegel wrote a piece about it, and something like 19 goals and
a bunch. They're from the same guys. You know, like Marlowe, he is what he is, but he's getting paid 6.5. He's got to give them that 25 goals. He has to. That's what they're paying him to do.
Well, you saw on one of the goals, I forget if it was the second one or not, he got, like, totally beat on the wall. The puck got rimmed around the boards. The D went right past him to keep the puck in. And, like, he's just not in it right now.
No, you guys can say what you want about him, how much he makes and his profile. I do not believe he's in a position to be in a front-line position for the Maple Leafs right now. I think, at best, he's in a third-line position. And I know that's a lot of money for a third-line left winger, but
But well, even it doesn't matter what line you're on. Ray's saying you got to pay attention to detail. First line, second line, third, fourth. But, you know,
okay. So
details are simple.
You're right.
He's played 1,500 games in the league,
and he knows what to do. It's just about missing assignments and that. But let's be honest. You just talked about Johnsen. Take a look at their left side. You've got a 39-year-old struggling Marlowe right now. You've got Hyman, who is what he is, hardworking, gets rewarded, you know, with ice time. He's good on that.
15 to 20 goals scored.
Tops.
Yes.
But not not paid to score goals.
No.
He brings other elements to
But I'm just saying,
game.
Like, and then...
You got Ennis,
You've had Levo, Ennis, Johnsen. Like, the left side, right from the get-go, hasn't been a strength of their organization. The right side with Kapanen coming up, we all know what Marner is or what we believe he's going to be.
Brown's got to be better.
Brown's got to be better, but the missing, when you're missing Nylander, like that's a big piece there. Mm. And the GOAT, have you mentioned his name at any point? Ray, you've done the games. Like, the GOAT is a hard-working guy, but...
Other than why is he on the ice? No,
well,
I haven't.
But I'm just suggesting, like, their bottom six, with Nazem not scoring, have been a non-factor. And that has to change.
So why not flip Marlowe to Kadri's line? Like, Kadri is a $4.5 million pair of earrings right now. But you don't need them.
Yep.
Or put him in a role where he can do something.
Right.
Like, it's great he's got patience, and it's great that he's, you know, his maturity's helping him along through this scoreless drought. But outside of the game in Dallas where I think he had a post, and he had two other chances, and then the next game he had a couple of really good chances, he's not in it either. So you got a couple of guys in Marlowe and Kadri who had success, who aren't really in the shake of it, put them together. Let them play together. Maybe that's something that can ignite them both a little bit. Because right now, like, Kadri feels like, when I'm doing the games, he feels like the most out-of-place player. Like, I look at him and I'm like, what's he doing? Like, there's no impact from him. And this is a guy coming off two 32-goal years in a row. It's not like he forgot how to play.
What would you think, Ray, of moving Kadri to the second power play unit but revolving it around him? You know, like put him on one of the wings and say you're going to play a prominent role, but you're on the second unit.
Yeah, but you get 12 seconds.
You might get 30. Right now it doesn't matter what he gets because
they went 0-5 in their last two games. So maybe he's going to get some minutes. And instead of being a decoy on the first.
He's not touching the puck on the first one. Why not make him important on the second unit?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess so. I guess I'm thinking more at 5-on-5 where more of the game is played. He just looks... He looks on the fringe of the game. And I remember so many instances in the past where we said, man, he's right in the middle of it. Remember when he drove McDavid crazy? Last year? And then he scored the overtime winner. He drove him crazy. Like, he looks so far from that. And he shouldn't be so far from that.
Well, it's almost like he's still in that adjustment period, Ray, where when the Maple Leafs signed Tavares, fan base... Myself, Hayes, not Noodles, everyone was somewhat excited. But when you look at the situation, if you're in the locker room, one guy that was probably like, this is really cool and everything, but maybe not that cool, that one guy would have been Kadri.
Yeah. I don't know how he said, oh, this is going to be great, and it doesn't matter about points and all that stuff, but it does also matter about that. Because you're just kind of hanging out right now.
Yeah.
And you're not making any impact, and it sucks when you're like that. Everything else is moving around you, and you're not.
Yeah.
I mean, the signing of Tavares opened up some other issues that they've got to address, and they're not easy ones to address.
Yeah, I agree.
On the ice, off the ice. I mean, we're talking about William Nylander practicing in Austria, right? Like, they had his coach on, or the coach of the team, on the morning show, and he said that he looks great. He's motivated, but that doesn't mean anything. He's not playing for the Leafs. He's not playing in the NHL.
It's funny, all of a sudden, though, now people are more interested about him again since
absolutely.
They're not scoring 5 goals a game.
Right. You lose 2 games in a row, and you basically get shut out, and all of a sudden people are wondering the impact that Nylander would have on this team. It is going to be a fun week for Leaf fans, though. It's only 2 games, but it's 2 big ones. A rare back-to-back at Winnipeg on Wednesday and at home to Winnipeg on Saturday. And the Matthews versus Laine discussion, I'm sure, will be prominent this week, and they're always going to be connected. But how has your opinion changed, if at all, since the draft in terms of Matthews versus Laine based on what we've seen the past couple of years?
Hasn't changed for me. I mean, I would always take, given anything equal, I'd take the centerman over the winger. I love Laine's personality. I love the way he shoots. He's a, man, the guy's a horse. And he's, you know, he kind of gets to sit in the weeds a little bit in Winnipeg because they're worried about Scheifele and Wheeler. And he's on a very good team. Like, they're really good. But they've got some issues they're kicking around too. Like the left side of their defense is a question mark. Is Brian Little a number two center? Because last year it was Paul Stastny. And, you know, that affects Laine as well. It's, you know, Little's a right-hander. Stastny's a left-hander. Laine was getting the puck pretty easily last year. Will he get it the same? Ehlers seems to have, you know, stubbed his toe coming out of the gate here. So even though they've got a good record, they're kicking around a couple issues too.
How would you deal with that, Ray? Would you say, you know what, we got to go find the replacement for Paul Stastny right now? Or you say, you guys figure it out until the deadline because we don't have the cash or the whereabouts to fix it right now?
The second one for me, it's like, okay, you guys got to figure this out.
Yeah.
But you got to call Ehlers in and, you know, and I'm sure Paul Maurice has, and hell, he had him on the fourth line with Jack Roslovic, who eventually may be their number two center. Mm-hmm. But right now, you know, he's just getting going. And, I mean, like, would you not say to, you know, publicly they're saying, oh, we're balancing out the lines. But privately, would you not say to Ehlers, you can see the way the lines are listed, can't you?
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason you're where you are. And I know you want to play with your buddy so you can play Fortnite and you can score goals, too. So let's get chop and going here.
To me, Ehlers is William Nylander. He gets treated the same way in Winnipeg as Nylander was treated with Babs.
Yeah, you're fast and you can score and everything, but once
flash,
you don't do it,
but 60 points, they're the same player in a lot of different ways. I look at Winnipeg, you're right. Brian Little is a guy who's gone up and down your lineup. They're very happy with Lowry, who's got, I think, 4 goals already as your number three slot center, who's a horse. Like, he's a really good player. It's just, I think they're going to sit back and say, you guys sort this out. They've got enough skill. I think they're as skilled as the Leafs up front. I just, you know, their D have to sort things out. Like, that Jacob Trouba is a mean SOB on the back end. Like, they've got a lot going for them, but that's why I'm looking forward to these Wednesday Saturday matchups. Like, it may be what the Leafs need right now is a real good head to head test against a big time team.
Ray, quickly before we let you go, we can all chime in. Is there anyone in the NHL that's hearing this music right now?
John Stevens.
I was going to say that.
LA Kings head coach.
You think when he walks in the dressing room, this just blares?
And maybe looking around, but one of the doors is Rob Blake. Just like the corner of his head, just around to see what's going on. They have been stinky, P-U-E.
Yes, they have. They're getting smoked. Like, they're not just losing. They have the worst goals differential outside of Detroit.
I think when Bobby Bugner sees James Reimer in the net, all he hears is...
This is the music he hears?
Just on the surround sound in the rink.
Maybe.
Well, they got to be hoping that Louis's around the corner. You know, because they're...
Looks at Louis's knee, all he hears is...
You think Colorado's hearing this because that Ottawa pick? Ottawa's off to a better start than a lot of people thought. You know, a lot of people thought that Ottawa pick was a lock to be certainly top four, just based on them finishing dead last.
I think there'll be a market correction still, but you're right, it's not going to be a... I don't think there'll be basement barrel,
no.
Put it that way.
Don't forget, not one... They've had one injury so far to CeCe.
Yeah.
But
well,
there's 70
and
games left, man.
Yeah, and yeah. Kachuk. And
I will say before we go, every time Jeff Blashill writes his lineup on the board...
Yeah. It's tough sledding in Detroit right now.
And just
almost the Chicago Blackhawks in the second period.
Yeah. I think Q didn't hear anything between his ears except this in the second period.
How many shots did they give up?
Well, it's either 33 or 34. It was a lot.
Let's call 33.
It was an NHL record, put it that way. They beat it by either 3 or 4 because the other record was 30. Cam Ward hears that music. And I watched that game. Like it was
an onslaught. That Tampa team was loaded.
Tampa looked really good.
And just think, gentlemen, as bad as Detroit's been, Arizona's worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Those stats people in Arizona, this is on their ghetto blaster in their office. Goodbye, Ray.
See you, boy.
There's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst. Yeah, Arizona's in trouble again. Another poor start, man. It's clockwork. Like they're 2-5 out of the gate. But that division has not been very impressive.
No,
like Vegas is starting to get rolling. San Jose will get it together, I think. But beyond that, Anaheim, I can't say that I've watched them a lot. I watched the majority of that Sabres game last night. They looked brutal. Yeah. And if you look up the stats.
Yeah, they're giving up a ton of shots.
Like a ridiculous amount.
38 a night.
Yeah. Like it's old school Randy type hockey where it's just in prime time chances too.
Yeah.
Someone posted a stat that Gibson, was it Mike Kelly?
Mike Kelly and the
they
point.
They faced like 30 shots from the slot or something
which is
on Saturday.
Ridiculous, yeah.
Yeah. Like that's and Anaheim's off to a decent start.
And you shouldn't do that
from the standings
with that defensive
perspective.
Court.
That's the thing. Everyone's like, I love Lindholm. Why wouldn't you? I love Manson. Why wouldn't you?
Fowler.
Montour and Fowler.
Yeah.
What's the reasoning behind it? Like, what is it about?
I've watched them several times now, including that Buffalo game yesterday. They are so loose in their own zone. It's awful. They just give up shots from everywhere.
Yeah.
They do drive-bys. And it is weird. Like, that is something that is glaring because it is a common trait with teams that Randy coaches is they give up a
give
lot
up
of
way
high,
too
high
many
volume of shots.
Yeah. The only team that Tampa's been off. They're 5-1. They're rolling.
Nashville's legit.
Is the only team for me that's had like just a textbook start. Like that game on Saturday night, Edmonton never had a chance.
I will say
never
this.
Close.
The best team I've seen so far this year is Nashville.
They are so.
I think Winnipeg is right there, but Nashville.
Although Pekka Rinne is injured now, but
yeah, the other kid's good though.
UC Soros,
he's not a big guy, but he's skilled. I think the exit plan, anyways, past Pekka, even if they sign Pekka to a short term deal, is to get Soros to that next level. I don't know if he can handle it. That's the million-dollar question there.
Well,
but he's
see.
A very talented goaltender. UC Soros.
Yep. Jack Armstrong coming up in the 6 p.m. hour. Raptors down at Scotiabank tonight with Charlotte in town. We'll tee that game up. World Series starting tomorrow. We'll get to that in the next hour as well. Marcellus Wiley, our NFL analyst, will join us next. Raps in action tonight. Charlotte in town. Jack Armstrong will join us in about a half an hour. They're off to a great start, 3-0. Winning games on the road without Kawhi. And Kawhi, I mean, looked really good on Friday night. That was a big win against Boston. That is an early statement. And those two teams, we know they're very good. We expect them to win a lot of games. Hopefully they meet at some point in the playoffs, hopefully in the third round. But you got to get after those teams. You know, the NBA, it's been a class system for a long time. You know, it's top heavy. You know you're going to beat up on the Knicks and the Nets and Atlanta and Chicago and but what do you do against the top three or four teams?
Yeah.
And that's what burned the Raptors last year. They were unbeatable against the brutal teams.
Right.
Like, the record was actually ridiculous. They lost, like, two games against teams that were under 500, something
right.
like that. But they were about 500 against the real deal.
They had some heater games
boys.
Early on. I think they went into Houston, they won.
By double digits. That
next
was a big
night
win.
In New Orleans, they won.
Yeah. No, yeah. They beat Houston at home and on the road. But outside of that, what do you got for us? So we'll see. And Charlotte is not a big boy in the NBA. They're like 9 or 10 point favorites tonight. So Jack's coming up in about a half an hour. Our buddy Marcellus Wiley, he's got a new book out, Never Shut Up, The Life, Opinions, and Unexpected Adventures of an NFL Outlier. Comes out tomorrow. He joins us every single week.
Can't
right
wait
here on
to
Overdrive.
Read it. That'll be great.
It's going to be a real good book. And he joins us now courtesy of the Maple Toyota Hotline. What's up, Marcellus?
I'm doing great, man. It's our last interview before I can say I'm an author.
That's right. I like that, man. Get that on the Wikipedia page.
Oh, man, it's great, man. It's Book Eve, as I'm calling it. So maybe it's going to be a sleepless night just to have it finally released. It was a two-year process in writing it and five-year process in trying to entice me to write it. But all fun, and I'm excited to get everyone's reaction and kind of color in the lines of my life experiences.
Before we get into the football, you had some tweets regarding the Rondo spit. It's not cool. I thought it should have been a lot more than whatever he got. What was it, three games?
Three games, yeah.
I mean, spit in a guy's face, that's not cool. I think it should be 10 minimum, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm with you guys as well. I mean, if the most disrespectful act that you can do on the court, on the field, is spit on someone. J.J. Stokes, Bill Romanowski comes to mind, and this wasn't to that extent. And in part, I think that's why he didn't get the punishment as severe as desired. But it still was intentional, and it still was spitting. It was just crazy to see it all unfold. And so many soap operas played out at once. Brandon Ingram all of a sudden with his newfound toughness. The respect to him as a young player. And, you know, when you got the king on your side, obviously everyone feels like they could flex. But just the same old beef between Rondo and Chris Paul, 10 years running, finally came to a head. And just to see all this happening in the week one of the NBA, man, craziness is yet to be seen going forward because these guys have to return. These guys have to play each other again. The soap opera will continue.
Bill Romanowski, didn't that guy spit on someone's face like every game he played? That guy was a lunatic. Okay.
Yeah, he was. And it's funny, I know him in real life now, and to this day I remind him how I would have never been his friend if I were playing against him in those times or on his team even. He just was playing psycho ball out there. But unnecessary roughness, that penalty would have been called on me every single play the rest of that game if you spit on me. I would never stop responding and fighting you if you spit on me. So
no kidding.
It's just crazy, man, to go to that dark place like that.
Yeah, Romanowski, man, he scares me. Yeah, I've interviewed him before. Dude. He's so intense. Like
gritty.
He's so intense and gritty. Like by the end of it, you're like, all right, dude, thank you for joining me, I think. Like that was insane, but cool analysis. Anyway.
Right.
Marcellus Wiley joining us again. His book coming out tomorrow, Never Shut Up, The Life, Opinions, and Unexpected Adventures of an NFL Outlier. I would assume the Bills probably come up at some point in the book. You obviously played there for a long time, and you're from L.A., you live in L.A., so I'm sure this stat is not new to you, that Todd Gurley is personally responsible for more points this season than the Bills' offense. Can you put that into perspective, how pathetic that is for us, please?
Wow. Unreal. Obviously, no success or continuity at the quarterback position is always the culprit. And when you talk about offensive struggles, usually the commonality is some unsettled issues at that position. And you look at this team, obviously that's the problem, whether it's injury or just having a rookie out there thrown to the fire, thrown to the wolves. It's crazy to watch the Buffalo continue to struggle. And especially in that position, a position that was manned by Jim Kelly until I got there. And in my years playing with Buffalo, even though we had a revolving door, we still had some success. Doug Flutie obviously comes to mind. So they just haven't solved that position yet. And they've tried and they've tried. And who knows if Josh Allen is the guy, to tell you the truth. He's had some flashes. And I think at times we have to go to the old motto of the NFL where, as a rookie, just show me flashes. Like, now we're in a different time, a different era, where we want to see it all, microwaved, ready-meady on day one. But I'm from the older NFL where, okay, rookie, just show me something. And he has shown me something, but now you got to stay healthy and try to rally the troops and lead the boys consistently. So we haven't seen that yet, and Tom Brady's coming to town. I don't think this is the week that you right the ship.
No, it's not going to happen. That spread will be ridiculous this weekend. And we were talking about Patrick Mahomes to kick off the hour, where this guy, he's not technically a rookie, but as a starter, he is. I mean, he's only started 7 games, and he's putting up numbers that are ridiculous. And if Baker Mayfield did that once, we talk about it for weeks. If Josh Allen did it once, we talk about it for weeks. I feel like we're already used to this. It's like Mahomes' complacency, and it's been 7 weeks because every single week he puts up like 350 yards and 4 touchdowns. Like, I've never seen anything like this.
It's unreal. He's a victim of his own success. He's already created a new expectation and standard, which we won't grade him by brilliance. We won't even respect good. We won't even respect very good. Just greatness and brilliance. It's amazing. I went to the first game, L.A. Chargers versus Kansas City right here in L.A., and I came back on the shows and I told everybody, he's not just next level. He's beyond that. This guy is going to tear this league apart. And every single NFL pundit was like, calm down, Wiley, week one. I'm like, when you see it, you know it. And this is a guy that I think we've all now come to realize. We've seen it. We know it. He's going to be special. And it's no way around it. This is not going to be a sophomore slump next year. There's not going to be a guy going through his third-year struggles, Dak Prescott. There's going to be a guy that's going to ball till he falls. And his arm strength, his weaponry in terms of what he has and having that offense, and Andy Reid, genius, lending himself to this offense. And more importantly, his moxie. The guy grew up in the professional ranks. His dad was a professional pitcher. That does wonders for you when your dinner table conversations growing up are about pro sports. Like, he's giving you the inside scoop, the dirt, the dope. You're not jaded, and you're also not caught off guard by anything that's thrown his way. He's been ready-made for this position since he was a youngster, and he's showing it.
How do you feel about the trade today? Amari Cooper going from Oakland to Dallas, and the Cowboys giving up a first-round pick.
A week after, John Gruden said, we're not tanking.
I think John Gruden has a directive from upstairs. Like, hey, go to Vegas with the cupboard baron. Like, go to Vegas without anybody on this team so we can go out there and reconstruct and rebuild and go that way. Maybe that's the game plan, because it certainly seems like he's making these moves of slashing and slicing 3 of their top 5 players on their roster. Khalil Mack, Marquette King, now Amari Cooper. That's 3 of the top 5 players you had. He's gone. So, obviously, this is a demo. They're trying to tear this thing down. But for Dallas, it's a great move. One, you get a number one receiver. It puts Cole Beasley in his proper position as the number 2 receiver. More importantly, this will expose what's the real issue with the Cowboys. Some people say it's Dak. Some people say it's Jason Garrett. Now you bring in Amari Cooper, you take a lot of those excuses out the door. They have to go. Now we have to see, Dak, can you hit a number one wide receiver in stride? Jason, can you get the ball to a number one wide receiver? And I think this is more than just the production he adds to this team. He's going to solve some of the riddles that's been questioned about this team going forward. Dak's coming up to a big contract. Is he a franchise quarterback? Is he the guy that can lead the Cowboys going forward? I think Amari Cooper is going to help him solve that one way or the other.
Do you get the impression like the NFC East is still up for grabs?
Absolutely. Think about it. The Redskins, 2-game lead on the Cowboys and the Eagles, but the Eagles get to play the Cowboys twice, and they get to play the Redskins twice. So right there, 4 games that you can make up some difference in 2 games against the leader. So if I'm Doug Peterson, if I'm in that locker room, it's easy to spin this to say, hey, we're in this. And this is a situation where everyone is going to go through a war of attrition, it seems like. No team is going to stick their head clear above water to the point where every other team has to suffer. You're going to feel like you're in contention all the way through week 17, I think, in this division this year.
Quickly, with the Eagles, they're stubbing their toe a little bit. Is it just the quarterback's got to get comfortable? Is it Super Bowl hangover? I mean, they got to get moving here.
Yeah, you're right. That Super Bowl hangover is big because all hangovers are different. For anyone who's ever had a beverage or two. And their hangover is different because this was an underdog mentality. This was an underdog team. They wore dog masks in the Super Bowl because they knew they were underdogs, and then they won it. But now they don't have an underdog mentality. Now they feel like they're not the ones out there being the hunters, they're being hunted. So it's a whole different animal for them right now, and they're trying to adjust to it and obviously trying to get back to where their quarterback is comfortable, because he wasn't the quarterback in the Super Bowl. So he didn't lead this team to a championship. They're not defending a championship. Nick Saban always talks about that. He says, my teams are not defending championships. That team, as constructed, is trying to win a championship. They need that mindset, and then they'll be fine.
The book is Never Shut Up, The Life, Opinions, and Unexpected Adventures of an NFL Outlier. Comes out tomorrow. You can find it in bookstores and online. We're really looking forward to seeing how that plays out. Good luck with it, Marcellus. We always appreciate you doing this. We'll do it again next week.
All right, T-Dot. Take care, guys. Talk to you soon.
There's Marcellus Wiley. Every Monday on Overdrive at 5:30. And as of tomorrow, an author. There's only one author in this room right now. Jamie
Noodles,
Noodles McLennan. When's that second book coming out?
I don't know. I mean,
I don't know. I'm sure the guy is going to be outside here any time sniffing around.
I haven't seen that guy in a while, actually.
He'll be back.
The book guy.
Brian.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. He's a really good guy. He's always sniffing around looking for book ideas.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't know. I've got lots of ideas. The thing is the landscape of the world. I had a name picked out for the second book, Man Conversations. You can't have that now. Because you can't do that. Right?
People would say, why can't women be included?
Exactly.
Is that what you're suggesting?
Say people conversations.
But you got to reference, like, Man Conversations is from our coach.
Right.
The famous Ukrainian head coach at the Euros.
Yes, I can't remember that guy. We don't even have the sound of that.
If you're a man, just go with me and I will tell a man conversation with you.
See, but I love that people don't know that conversation.
Right,
so it could be perceived as something else.
That's
so I'm going to have to change that. But I do have some stories. We don't have time.
I know, it's tough. You're
next
a busy
summer,
guy.
I will write it, I believe. But see, Ian Mendes worked with me, and he's a busy man too.
Right.
So we'll see. We'll get something going.
Should
maybe
we play
it would
that
be
clip again?
Behind the scenes at Overdrive.
Ooh,
I could tell
we
some
should do
stories.
That, a tell-all Overdrive book, and then we'll just all get fired.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we'd get fired. But I want to hear that sound clip again. That is awesome.
If you are a man, just go with me, and I will tell a man conversation with you.
All right, so Overdrive, we have a pair of tickets for the Leafs taking on the Stars November 1st. Every day this week, we will provide the clue to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player. And on Friday, if you call in with the name of that Leaf, you're the first one in, you're going to see the Leafs take on Dallas. The clue for today is this Maple Leaf played with both Todd Gill and Al Iafredi.
What?
Play the Halloween music. Because we had someone send in a tweet last week that I have to pay respect to. Al Iafredi heard this music when his helmet fell off.
The famous replay where he's sliding along the boards.
And you know, when he hit the ice, his helmet was off and he grabbed the skullet and said, no one is looking at that.
He's up in the air, his helmet is falling off, and this is all he can hear.
And I don't even know how to describe, that was like a breadbasket up top with a refined mullet comb over on the back.
The greatest skullet of all time is Al Iafredi. I can't help but think of it whenever I hear his name.
And he didn't care when he landed about jibs, concussion. He
CTE
had the palm.
Nothing.
CT.
Yeah, he was
he had
like
the palm on the monkey bum.
There was a guy that I
said,
I'm not
you're
gonna
not looking. You are not looking.
Just Halloween music when his helmet fell off.
It didn't go well.
No. So let me.
Mad scramble to find the bucket.
Because I was laughing, let me say the clue again. This Maple Leaf played with both Todd Gill and Al Iafredi. There's your clue for the day. Shout out to both of them.
I don't care if Halloween, when it ends, this music. It's going the whole year.
I think we might have to. We'll sprinkle it in.
We got to create a segment.
Yeah, we will. Jack Armstrong coming up. The World Series is on deck. We'll tee that up as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.
You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2. Brought to you in part by Alpine Credits. Own your home and need a loan? With Alpine Credits, homeowners get approved.